Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show Unleashed with me, Len Batopic, for one day only. Mark's back tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining me. I think that you'll agree we had a fascinating conversation with Drew Thomas Allen, who isn't the biggest fan of sleepy Joe Biden, if I can use that pejorative phrase, and also thinks that there is an ideological distinction between Trump versus Biden, one being authoritarian, the other one potentially giving America its freedom back. He's not 100% optimistic that Biden can do anything very positive, sets glass ceilings, insane glass ceilings, to use his phrase, and then breaks them. Well, hopefully, Donald Trump, for him at least, will do a different job. We'll be fighting the establishment, not just in the Democrats, but also in the Republican Party, by the sound of it. The swamp, which is to be drained, seems to contain both. We'll be talking more about that in a short while with my next guest. That's Donna Jackson, who's pretty senior as an operative in Project 21 Black Leadership Network, has had forays into ministry and politics, and has a tremendously rounded view of these matters. We'll find out what Donna says, a natural progression of the conversation I've had with Drew. Before we go to Donna, let me just share some of the comments and observations from yourselves in the previous hour. Craig Obal says, can they really let Trump win, though? Surely with all the crimes the Democrats have committed, they can't allow it. I suspect that what Craig Obal is saying is if Trump does get in, he'll be able to drain that particular swamp, too, and identify what the Biden administration may have done wrong in rather the same way that Biden and his people have tried to harry and push and press Donald Trump and his reputation for the last 4 years. Mazzy says Trump will have a very raw hide if he continues to go at this rate. Craig Abath adds, Biden had actually flown in 300,000 illegal immigrants as just one example. Can't verify that, but that's what Craig Abath says. Lord Melbury says, I fear for Trump's safety. They'll do anything to stop him being reelected, even doing a JFK on him. That's a dark concept. But El Cid does point out that Donald Trump does have his own security protection. I suppose Craig Abath would think that's just as well. He adds, Lembit, don't act so astounded. These maniacs on the left in the USA are capable of extreme violence and stupidity and malice. Fair point. But the fact that under Joe Biden, there's an actual health warning on some of the original documents defining the United States of America comes as a surprise to me. Maybe you knew about that. I did not. Lord Melbury says, will it be good enough to protect him from the CIA? That's an interesting and pointed observation. And El Cid says he doesn't rely on fake government provided resources. A long dialogue about that. I'm just going to scroll down from there. Holly says they can say they killed anyone. They lie. Who would believe a word they say? Get them out. But the problem there, Holly, is who is them? It sounds to me from what we were learning from Drew Allen that there are elements in the Republican Party which are also institutionalizing the situation against Donald Trump. That's certainly something I've observed. That's my opinion. You may have a different one. Holly adds, it's like a wearing down tactic. People are so bored by them, they don't look anymore. Just what they wanted, thieves and liars. Holly, you certainly haven't had your posh dinner tonight, by the sound of it. Blood sugar level there, but I happen to agree with you. Craig Abath asks, Drew Allen, my previous guest, is highlighting the double standards and hypocrisy of the Democrats and the left. Well, I would say, I think, that the Democrats are the left. Point well made. And Craig Abath adds, you are correct, Drew. Even if he gets in, they won't let him do anything positive or push his good policies. And El Cid adds, the US will be clowns and clowns and clowns. Then we are exceptional. That's rather cryptic. But there we go. Hemingway. Back in here, Joe Biden's approval rating has risen to 100% amongst defense contractors. These military conflicts are highly profitable for us, said a defense spokesman. And the president is providing just the kind of hostile leadership that we're looking for. Well, Point well made again there, Lord Melbourne. He needs to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds, just like what John F. Kennedy wanted to do. More ominous observation there. Lots more commentary about liars, demons, and Holly reveals the question that you're all asking all over the world. She's had a nice chicken pie today. Thank you. Not posh. Thank you for that, Holly. The world can relax. Well, it could be a very posh chicken pie. Who knows? If it's free range with posh eggs, who knows? Do keep your calls and comments coming. I will share them as best I can. As far as I'm concerned, you make the show every bit as much as the guests I have here with me in the studio. Before we go to my next guest, I want to talk about nationalism. And this is a subject which I'm drawing from UK experience on, but it affects everyone, including the United States of America. In Scotland, two interesting things have happened today. First of all, the Scottish National Party, which is a nationalist party, which means it's a party that wants Scotland to break away from the rest of the United Kingdom and live as an independent state. Well, that party has abandoned one of its fundamental commitments to net zero by abandoning its commitment to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. That's the killer gas, which is actually a fertilizer for plants and not really doing any harm at all, really. But that killer gas by 75% by 2030. Lo and behold, at last, they've said, actually, we're not going to do that after all. Why not? Well, that's when it gets a bit tricky. It's not clear exactly officially what the reason is. And more to the point, they still stand by their net zero objective for the year 2045. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and I find this equally interesting, but Peter Murrell has been rearrested in an investigation in Scotland. Now, who is Peter Murrell, you might ask? He's actually the husband of the former Prime Minister or First Minister of Scotland. That was Nicola Sturgeon. And without going into the details, because we haven't got time, and it might not be interesting to you if you're down in Dallas or up in New York, but basically there's been some financial impropriety. That's the allegation. Hasn't been proved, but that's what's going on here. And they're trying to find out if Peter Murrell's done something wrong. So we've got two big stories here, both of them about the SNP, the Scottish National Party. One of them is about Scotland abandoning its profoundly impossible goal to reduce its carbon dioxide emissions by 75% by 2030. The other one, the rearrest of the husband of the former First Minister or Prime Minister of Scotland. Now, the Scottish National Party wants to break away from Scotland to do it better. But I'm wondering what better means. Nothing has been proved. There has been no prosecution with regard to this alleged impropriety, or at least the investigation into alleged impropriety. And yet this is very much a carbon copy of the kind of thing that opposition politicians point the finger of blame at in Westminster, in London. To make this even simpler, this looks very much like the old politics, not the new politics. I suppose you could argue it's a smear tactic. It's an attempt to make the SNP, the Scottish National Party, look no better than anybody else. Let's see how it plays out. My prediction is this. What we will see here now is a fairly long, drawn out and convoluted process, which may lead to a prosecution. It may not even lead to a trial. But it's all damaging to the idea that we've got a squeaky clean, north of the border, independent agenda, which will change politics for good. For one thing, the politicians in the north of the border country, Scotland, are actually attacking each other on it. So at the very least, we already know that the mudslinging is very likely to continue whether Scotland is part of the United Kingdom or not. The other thing we learn is that flagship policies are no more unsinkable or Titanic, to use the proper word, north of the border than they are south of the border. Not long ago, the current Prime Minister of the whole of the United Kingdom, Rishi Sunak, abandoned a key plank of his environmental agenda. And then we found out that Keir Starmer, the man likely to be the next Prime Minister of the UK from the Labour Party, abandoned his agenda, which was about spending £28,000 a year. That's about $35 billion a year. And in only a little country, that those numbers are far bigger in the UK than they are in the United States, relatively speaking, in what was going to be a green recovery. Now, north of the border, we see the same thing. The Scottish National Party doing exactly the same thing. As far as I'm concerned, what we're seeing here is a great convergence. The Scottish National Party doesn't really seem very different at all. And then there's a final irony. Far from wanting to stay independent, they want to go back into the European Union. So what they're basically saying is a Goldilocks kind of comment. Britain is too small a union to be in, or maybe too big a union to be in. Scotland's too small to be on its own, but Europe is just right. If you think about the actual mathematics there, it doesn't make any sense at all. Why do they want to be a small partner in a big European Union when actually they're doing pretty well in the UK? Does nationalism work? Well, this is the international question I put to you. The example of Scotland, I think, is replicated time and time again in many places where nationalism is big. I was a nationalist campaigner for Estonia, the land of my mother and father, campaigning for its independence from the former Soviet Union. So I'm not in principle against the idea of independence. What I am against is the idea of tokenistic independence. When you change the border status, but you don't change anything else. And I finish on this. Perhaps that's exactly the same problem we've had with Brexit. Let's go to our next guest. I'm Len Bitopek. This is Mark Morano's show Unleashed on today's News Talk TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio TNT.
I'm delighted to introduce Donna Jackson to you this day. Donna, thanks very much for joining me, Len Bitopek, here on today's News Talk. I'm sorry I'm not Mark Morano, but I'll do my best.
No, it's a pleasure to have you. You're pleasant.
Well, you flatter me. You flatter me. I'll take the win, even if you're being sarcastic. Thanks very much for joining me. You have an amazing curriculum vitae. I mean, just reading from it. Director of Membership Development for Project 21 Black Leadership Network. I've done membership development. It's a horrendously difficult job. I would salute anyone who's done that. Seasoned accountant, I need one of those, Donna. I'm not a bad person. I just do my accounts badly. I've got a great accountant now, actually, but you might be great for me if I ever work in the US. You've been in politics and ministry. You're a public speaker. How did you get to be such a high achiever? What happened in your life that made you work so hard?
My parents told me that I can only depend on myself. And if I didn't succeed, it was my fault, not any other outside influence. And so I took her at her word, tried my hardest, believed that I could, studied harder, worked harder. And that's how I've gotten to where I am.
To be a bit cynical about the United Kingdom, that's the opposite of what they tell our British members of Parliament. They say, it doesn't matter how well you've done. You go to the right school and you'll be prime minister, but not for long, just for little bits. And then you can go and
well,
do something
here,
else.
Here in the United States, they think if you're black, you're too stupid to get an ID card. So, so they have a better chance over there when you consider the fact that they don't think I can walk three blocks or upload a document to get an ID card. So I'll say that.
Well, okay. In that case, it's a race to the bottom between the UK and the US, a new weird kind of special relationship. But there we go. Maybe that's how it is. You're a public speaker. What do you speak publicly on?
You know, most of my issues are on the harms of climate change policy. One of the things that I point out is that if you have a solution that's worse than the problem, that you shouldn't implement it. And I do it from an economic framework because the importance is that you cannot forget about the people when you're making these policies and how their lives are going to be impacted. It's amazing how little that our politicians take into account how it's going to affect the average person when they're making these policies, as if somehow the market doesn't matter, that we're just making products to make them. I mean, that works for the government when you just take taxpayer money and then failure is the goal. But in the real marketplace, you're supposed to actually succeed. If you don't make a good product, you don't get rewarded because your revenues decrease and your company goes out of business. I wish we adopted that model with the government.
Donna, now we're in trouble. My pet hate is the climate crisis hoax. What's happened here is you've just given a box of matches to an arsonist. For the next 40 minutes, we are going to have a lot of fun because we are going to torch. We're going to torch this climate fakery together, and I'm going to tickle you with words like electric vehicles, lithium batteries. We'll come to that in just a minute. We have to go to a break. I also want to cover with you about border policies and mandates and things like that. You're watching The Mark Morano Show. Lambert Obick just standing in for him today here on Unleashed on today's News Talk. Have your say as well. Go to the chat. I think we'll have precious little time to read them out. This is going to be a great 40 minutes we've got left here. You're listening to me. Don't go anywhere. We just have to have this break. See you in a moment.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
There was a plan on the British side to immediately after the victory over Germany to continue the war to push the weakened Soviet Union back over backwards. Yeah. So that is something that is not well known. That plan has been, you could find it on the internet and then it's off and on sometimes again. It's very difficult. It's not long. It's something like, if I recall correctly, something of 30 pages, I would say. I read it.
The Soviets had this coup in Czechoslovakia in 1948. And that appeared as the Soviets really was pushing forward. And they thought that this means that we have to start an alliance against the Soviets. And that was NATO became.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show with me, Len Petrovic, just standing in for today. Mark's coming back to be totally unleashed again tomorrow. A few comments about my observations about the topsy-turvy world of Scottish independence, using that as an example for wider world. Lord Melbury says Scotland is wanting to be a vassal state for the European Union. How can that be independence? The Scottish National Party really do have learning difficulties when it comes to politics. Thanks for that. Wee Fat Chuck says, you wouldn't believe the looks I got at home at a poker game when I stated that I love my English, Irish, Welsh brothers and sisters. LOL. Wee Fat Chuck is incidentally Scottish. I'm now sure of it. You've let it out of the bag. Well, I forgive you for taking that risk. I praise you for it, in fact. Elsie talks about corruption. And just one more, which is there's an interesting reference from Lord Melbury, which you need to have a look at that, actually. It's a fascinating thing. It's actually about Second World War and Nazism, not directly related to what we're discussing. Then there is a lot of further dialogue, and Donor29's joined it as well. I can't go into all of that because I've got to stay on point here, but suffice to say there's fascinating dialogue going on about nationalism there as well. But I don't want it to distract us too much because I have the incomparable Donna with me at the moment, Donna Jackson. Donna, just before the break, you said something which I find rather fascinating. You're not too keen on the environmental crisis agenda. Tell me about it in your own words and take as long as you like.
Okay, listen to me. The environmental crisis agenda is a government growing agenda so that they can micromanage the lives of individuals in their home, including every room in the house. It's the biggest hope, and it's also the biggest grift, so that you can extract more taxes from individuals and actually lower the standard of living so that you can shorten the lifespan of most human beings. They have this EV agenda. Amazing. You hear a lot about the America and how we're racist and systematically racist and how this wealth gap exists. But they want to take away, they want to price African Americans and minorities out of the private car market so that they take away their ability to have a car. Their own Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve of Philadelphia, put out a study that says you can actually decrease the wealth gap if you give minorities a car, because they have more access to better paying jobs. They have more access to more markets like the gig market. They can have two or three incomes so that they can make up the difference in income. And so what does the federal government do? What does the Biden administration do? Create an agenda where you create cars that are unaffordable to minorities so they don't have a car. They've incentivized manufacturers not to make gas-powered engines and make them unaffordable so that people can't have access to a car. So what do? You increase the wealth gap even bigger than it is. So now when they're talking about systematic racism, it's not about you call me a name, if you don't like me personally, it's about if I feel financially secure. And everything they're doing with this EV agenda is to make sure that people don't feel financially secure because they don't have access to jobs that are not located in their community. The best ones are usually 30, 40 minutes away outside of the community. You hear about all the crime. It's all interrelated. You hear about the crime. The crime leads to business shutting down in the community. So what happens? If I live in a community, I don't have enough money to buy a house, I have to drive outside of my community to get a job. They're taking away that ability. And there's some other things that are broad bridges, but I'm going to stop for a second.
I'll come back at you and then you can carry on. But you're being unfair, Donna. I see it this way. You can buy a secondhand electric vehicle fairly cheaply because they're useless, with a range of about 10 miles because the battery's wrecked and useless. And then you park it next to your house. And because the battery is cracked, it'll catch fire and burn your house down. And then you get the insurance and build a bigger house. Wealth generation, Donna. What's not to like?
Well, what's not to like is that African Americans have the lowest home ownership rate since before Jim Crow. Because they don't own their homes, they rent them. Because the median income of an African American is $45,000 a year. That's somebody that's doing well. When you have the average electric vehicle, that's $48,000 a year. Now, add that to the fact that the subprime auto loan industry is actually at its highest default rate in 30 years, which most African Americans have to take a part of because they have lower credit scores. So everything they're doing right now is predatory. The thought, 90% of electric vehicles are part of a two-car household. One-third of households can only afford one car. And for African Americans, that is the vast majority. So no matter how you slice it, it's going to be a bad deal for most minorities. And get this, they talk so much about all of these great programs that they have for African Americans. You know, we're going to give child care tax credits and earn income credits and all of this extra income. Caveat, attached to that is an asset limit. So if you partake in any of these programs like welfare, food stamps, housing subsidies, you have an asset limit of $3,000. Now, that's not $3,000 in savings, $3,000 in your car, $3,000 in cash on hand. No, total assets, $3,000. Bank accounts, insurance, 401ks, you can only own that much. That means that if you make an automobile $10,000, they still can't own it. The average cost of a car that most minorities own in America, it's probably $2,500 or less, because they'll get booted off of all of those programs. Not only will they get booted off of those programs, but they'll have to pay the government back. So they have to spend everything that the government gives them, and they're not even allowed to own a vehicle that expensive and still participate in these programs.
To be honest with you, an electric vehicle, which is worth $2,500, would be in such bad condition, it would only be good for storage. You could live in it, but you probably couldn't go anywhere in it, because an electric unit for one of these cars is something like about $22,000 just to replace it. You're completely right. The after sales value of an electric car is rubbish, because a secondhand electric car can be rubbish. And what I have to say, I agree with you on here. You've stirred me up into an angry mob now, Donna, one man angry mob. But the fact is, I can't believe that the people who are legislating for electric vehicles have the slightest understanding that just because they can afford a Tesla and a proper petrol car, everybody else can't, or lots of other people can't. And this two-car family point, I see this in the UK all the time. So for the little runaround virtue signaling going around for the dinner party, you use the electric car. But if you're making a proper journey, use the petrol one. I guess it must be the same in America, and the distances are even bigger.
It's 100%. And then you add that to the fact that most minorities live in urban communities where they don't have garages. They live in multi-generational homes. That means apartment buildings. There are no electric charging stations. I mean, they can't own it, first of all. So it's not even a question. But the second thing is, there's nowhere to charge it. They don't own their homes. I mean, it's ridiculous to think that a single mother with multiple kids would be able to, and the conversation always switches. They really want us to use public transportation. Because every time the whole agenda is built for the fact that they know the average person that owns an electric vehicle in the United States has an income of over $100,000, lives in a wealthier suburban community. So that automatically excludes most minorities. And I think that they do that on purpose because they don't want us to live in their communities. That's the bottom line.
Well, what they've done in London, the mayor of London at the moment, who's standing for re-election, he actually is presiding over policies in London which massively restrict the number of parking places in the inner city. So if you're out in the leafy suburbs where you've got a big drive and a nice garden, you can put two or three cars on there, one for you, one for your partner, one for the kids, maybe two. But in central London, they have an active policy to stop it. How on earth can a mayor who wants to level up wealth and opportunity think there's any logic in that? Or does he just think there'll be hundreds of big fat tables pushed right across the pavement, which could be stolen as well or electrocuted and they're a trip hazard, while everybody tries to charge up their cars? And also, I'm not sure about this, Donna, but has anyone in America actually figured out how much extra electricity you would need if you suddenly have like 200 million electric vehicles?
And they have it, but I think that's the point, because their philosophy is not a one for one. I say this all the time. It's a one for none. They really want to limit the number of cars that are on the road and people's access to private car ownership. I bring up the point all the time. Before Henry Ford created the Model T, The automobile had been around for 50 years, but what Henry Ford did was remarkable. He made a car that was affordable for the average man. That led way, actually built the suburbs. It created the hospitality industry. You think about it, it created a vacation for everyone. 70 to 85% of all of the revenues for fast food restaurants in this country is through the drive-through window. I mean, this is an industry that's going to be wiped out. I mean, there's so many statistics out there that says that if you're a single mother, which the vast majority of African Americans are, you can't get your kids from point A to point B, medical appointments, school activities, any of those things, without a use of a vehicle, a car. But really what they want to do is push African Americans and minorities into public transportation. They had the Inflation Reduction Act with all of this money set aside for these kinds of initiatives. You know that only seven electric charging stations have been built. $60 billion they allocated for it. Seven.
Hang on. Seven. You mean 70,000 or 700,000?
No, I mean seven electric charging stations have been built. And one of the things I'll point out, for this Green New Deal and environmental justice that's supposed to help minority communities, $60 billion. I want to give you a scenario of what $60 billion is. That's actually the market capitalization of Ford Motor Company that employs more than 200,000 people worldwide and supports millions of small businesses. In the United States, you may or may not have heard about the Tulsa riots, Black Wall Street riots, that this very affluent Black community where people were upper middle class, you could build over 2,000 Black Wall Streets in today's inflated value with that $60 billion, and we wouldn't even be talking about poverty today. But what is it going to go to? It's gone so far, seven electric charging stations. Most of that money is a green slush fund for all of the political friends to keep people in power and to make sure that there's an automatic barrier for people in the lower rung trying to get into the middle class, and it's being used to force people in the middle class into poverty because they created an impossible scenario. Affordability. Henry Ford made the car affordable, which built the suburbs, the middle class, hospitality, countless industries. They're creating an electric vehicle to do the exact same opposite, to make it unaffordable, so you can decimate all of these areas. And when you think about people that have lower college graduation rates, they largely work in the hospitality industry, which they want to destroy. So either way you look at it, they want to take away jobs from people. They want to take away freedom, because automobiles equals freedom for individuals. They want to make sure they destroy people's longevity.
Are you saying that that's a conscious plan? Because that's quite a big statement, that they deliberately want to do it. Or is it just sheer incompetence on Capitol Hill?
Oh, listen to me. I say this every time. I don't believe for a second that people don't realize that that's the consequence of what they're doing. I mean, if you're sitting down there and you know that a electric vehicle's car payments is $1,000 and you are living
We're going to come. You're seeing this coming in and out. We'll come back to you in just a minute. Just a slight problem with the signal there. Just before we go to the break, don't worry, folks, don't go anywhere. We're going to come back to Donna Jackson. She's on a roll. I really want to hear what she's going to say. So we'll just sort out her signal. I just want to give you some statistics. So this is kind of interesting. In the United States at the moment, this is just a figure which I want to share with you. I've just been looking, there are roughly 280 million private and commercial vehicles in the USA, 280 million. If they were all private vehicles, electric vehicles, this isn't precise, but let me give you a rough idea of this. Let's say it takes 10 kilowatts. That's the power you need to charge up these 280 million. These are just rough figures. That means you need 2,800 gigawatts. Just remember the figure, even if you don't understand what it means. 2,800 gigawatts to charge all of these up if they're all being charged up at the same time. The total capacity of the American national grid is 1,200 gigawatts, which is less than half what you would need just to charge up all the electric vehicles if you did nothing else. Of course, you could say they're not all going to be charged at once, but probably half of them are. So even if you were just going to be charging half of the fleet, the electric vehicle fleet that Biden dreams of, whenever everyone goes electric, you actually need to double the size of the national grid. You're not going to do that with wind turbines and solar panels. We'll come back to Donna in just a moment, but I just want to give you the chance to comment. You've still got 20 minutes here on the Mark Morano Show with me, Len Bitopic. Then we'll go back to Donna Jackson as well. Summary so far. Can't be done with electric vehicles in America. If you disagree, I'd love to hear your comment. If you do agree, I'd love to hear it even more. This is today's News Talk TNT. I'll see you after the break.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. To learn more, visit nature.org today.
Exposing the motives and agenda of the world's most powerful.
Unleashed.
This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show Unleashed with me, Len Bitopic. Just for today, Mark will be back tomorrow. A few of the comments here, I'll just go through them before we go back to Donna, who was definitely on a roll. She overheated the internet, I think. We'll come back to her in just a minute. Lots and lots of comments. Somebody said, I just scrolled past, I can't see. He said, naughty Lembit. What does that mean? What have I done? Explain. I see. Holly says, now, Lembit, the existing mayor, the highwayman, is levelling down. That's a very good point. Lord Melbury says, compared to petrol or diesel vehicles, it's said an electric vehicle causes 32 times more pollution from its materials for manufacture to its charging from fossil fuel power stations. And what of the pollution when its battery goes up like a firework? That's a good point. I want to talk with that about that with Donna for a minute as well. I'm tempted. Hemingway agrees with Holly that he's just one angry. He's a one man angry mob. That's me. That's me. Wee Fat Chuck says, Donna, you're right. Absolutely correct. Lots of support there. It's not a statistically significant sample, Donna, but if the viewership of the show tonight was the American electorate, you'd be the next president of America. I've no doubt about it. They would storm Capitol Hill only to carry you up into the White House. That's what would happen there. Well, they do it on foot. I mean, it wouldn't be an electric vehicle in sight. Just that statistic, you'd have to at least double the capacity of the national grid in America to have enough charging. And you're saying you've got 6 or 7 points.
Yes, yeah, and they're never going to. They never intended to build it. You know, one of the things I bring out, and just in general, understanding our American environmentalists, you know, and the left, the poverty industrial complex is just as lucrative and powerful as the military industrial complex, but it doesn't take an act of aggression. I bring that out for this reason. 85% of all the money they allocate for poor people or for low income people actually goes to the states, and the NGOs never makes it into the hand. So am I surprised that they only built 7 charging stations? Actually, I'm surprised they built that many, because the money is actually going to their pockets. They filter it and use Africans. Actually, I'm surprised they built that many, because the money is actually going to their pockets. They filter it and use African Americans to be able to push those bills through to line their pockets. They don't mean to actually help any minority come up. They want to make sure they keep them down. That's why you have illegal immigration. That's why you have all of these things. They want to make sure that people are not going to be financially secure. Black people, under the Trump policies, were actually creating more wealth faster than the top 1%. They have to stop that. And they're using a green tinge to do it. So now we use the climate crisis that we need to save our planet one poor person at a time. So it's all about sacrificing. We can go in private jets, stretch limousines, yachts, and live in mansions that use more electricity than the whole town. But you minority should be taking the bus, and we'll pick you up when you come and serve us, and we'll drop you off. That's basically what they're doing. So that's why I say, do you think they're doing it on purpose? 100% they know. They know that when they go into a car dealership, African Americans cannot afford that. They created the tax code to make sure that there's an asset limit, that if you even attempt to register a car that expensive, you'll get kicked out of all your benefits. And each program is leveled on top of each other to make sure that they help you in the short run, as long as you never help yourself in the long run. They know.
A lot of support coming for you. Holly says, yay, Donna for president. Holly hasn't got a vote, though. She's in Britain. I know that for a fact. So, Holly, just make a donation to her campaign fund. About $300 million would be a good start, I think. El Cid says, leveling up means more middle class down to working class, down to serfs. In other words, an inverted leveling down, I suppose. Holly adds, it's all a grift. Wee Fat Chuck says, most of the public charges are broken most of the time anyway. And all kinds of further comments here. El Cid says, our planet, my backside. Stronger language. I'm just not going to read it out like that. They also like lobbing bombs around in many areas of the world. You've touched on quite a point of contact there. Maybe the new special relationship, Donna, is between the working population of Britain and the working population of America, both of whom are enduring the upper middle class oppression of politicians who tell us that it's for our own good that energy prices are skyrocketing and we're not allowed to buy petrol and diesel vehicles.
It's outrageous. I mean, they're creating energy poverty within the war on fossil fuel. Then they're taking away our ability to actually make a living. You know, whoever controls the purse string controls the person, and they want to make sure that they control the purse string. They know a vehicle, with every vehicle a person owns, that's income they can make. You have a gig economy that people can participate in and make extra income for if they can work two or three jobs getting from one place to another where they can make extra income so that they can live in a decent home. They don't want you to be able to do that. Like I said, African Americans were making too much money. It was record home owner. They were having record home ownership rates. Well, office and all of it has been wiped out.
I was in Colorado Springs a couple of weeks ago for a space symposium, and the driver of the taxi who was taking me back to the airport, he was white, probably about 60, proudly explained the way he ran three taxis, all petrol, and he made a bit of money from the other two, but he was reasonable, didn't take much from the other two. And he drove himself as well. And he was a self-made man. He's never going to own a mansion. I didn't get into it, but I doubt he'll ever want to have an electric car. He reminded me of a group of people in this country called Just About Managing, JAMS. People who have done the best they can all their lives and are now suffering because of what's going on in their name by the servants of the people, which is the politicians. In your words, how do you feel you're being served by your administration right now, Donna?
That's the same thing they're doing now. They're blackmailing the American public to create an agenda and that we didn't ask for, but they tell us to deal with it and fall in line and do what we're told. They never asked us. They've never gone to African Americans and said, do you want environmental justice? We did a survey that asked African Americans, how much would you be willing to pay in order to serve the environment, to help the environment? Not one person was even willing to pay 5 cents extra for a gallon of gasoline, and that was before inflation hit. So that tells you where they are. Most African Americans don't trust all of their resources being on one utility. We're supposed to believe that we can have every appliance in our house be electric, our cars be electric, everything we're using electric, and somehow the bill isn't going to go up. No, this will be their way to make sure they shut down everything we have. And then we'll be at the mercy of the utilities that are going to make electricity too expensive. And then they always say, well, we're going to give them a subsidies. Well, you know the thing I say, why raise the prices in the first place? But, you know, if I'm investing, I don't put all of my eggs in one basket. Why would I want to use one utility source for everything I have? And then I know, because I participated in hearings, that they want to also make these electrified appliances, vehicles, have on-demand capability, which means that at any time, and this happened in California, they can shut off your electricity so that you don't have hot water when you need it. You don't have air conditioner when you need it. They can shut down your cars. And that's what they want to do. Micromanaging your life. And they have they're doing a mandate for every room in the house. They really do want to make sure they lower the people's standard of living. It's not an unintentional consequence.
I doubt whether it's going to affect Obama and his nice retreat or Biden. But the question is, the super rich Donald Trump, who's almost certain to be the presidential candidate for the Republicans, regardless of what the courts and indeed the Republicans are trying to do about it. Can he change things?
Well, you know what? I think that he will really put forth some policy to try, but it's going to take a lot. And I think that everyone needs to get on board and make people aware of what's going on. I think that we have the best chance with his policies to change things. The thought that people, union workers, would want electric vehicles that work in auto plants when you need fewer people on the line to actually make them. So it's going to get rid of jobs. And then the one thing I say is, you know what? Electric vehicles harm Black people on two continents. First, it uses slave labor in the Congos, and then it actually takes the prices Black people out of the marketplace so that they can't make a living. It's the crazy, it's the most egregious agenda I've ever seen. And I think that Trump is actively trying to reverse that.
A couple of things. Of course, all the people who get laid off in Detroit from building petrol cars can go off and join the fire service to put out all the electric car fires. So maybe there's a kind of a circular sort of solution to that. Which isn't too funny if I've ever seen one, but there we go. Question for you. Donald Trump is often presented as not being popular with the Black community. There's always a kind of inference that he's racist with these people who don't like him. But it doesn't sound to me you think he is.
You know what? I'll say this. If Donald Trump is racist, we need more people like him as racist, because he created a Black community boom. I mean, we were financially stable. We had permanent funding for historically Black colleges. We had record low unemployment. We had the largest financial increase and wealth increase, record home ownership, record entrepreneurship. I would rather have a racist in the office like that than have a Biden who claims the like of and doing everything to make sure that we are poor. Donald Trump is not a racist. But if he was, I say, give us more.
And he never said what Joe Biden said. Poor kids can do just as well as white kids. He never said that, but Joe Biden did. My all-time favorite.
And he didn't tell me if I didn't vote for him, I wasn't Black.
That's right. And he forgot that Kamala Harris wasn't the whitest person on the planet either. So much stuff. That's Joe Biden again. There's a whole lot of stuff I can't read out to you here because they're trying to talk. The chat's gone crazy about what would you call a group of politicians. A collective noun for politicians is a lie. For example, somebody else says it. I can't read these because some of them are extremely rude. What about a thicket of politicians or a steel? Two other things. Holly says, I can just about get away with this. It's all bollocks. I think I can just about get away with that, Holly. It's brilliant, but I prefer to do that after the watershed. And we're nowhere near the watershed in America. And Hemingway reminds me of something. Donna, you probably don't know this, and you should know this. Don't forget, today is National Garlic. Oh, no, sorry. Tomorrow is National Garlic Day, Lembit. It's also National Clean Out Your Medicine Cabinet Day. But then you probably knew that. That's what Hemingway says. Tomorrow is National Garlic Day, Donna. All over the world, apparently. Just to finish off, because we're nearly out of time, if you were advising Donald Trump, because I guess you're not too keen on advising Joe Biden or you don't think there's much point, what would you advise Donald Trump to do between now and November to improve his chances of winning the presidential election?
So I can't tell people who to vote for, but I will say this. Make sure you have a policy that actually strengthens the middle class and it takes away barriers for those in the lower rung to get into the middle class. You don't tell poor people that we think their air is dirty and so we're going to kill all your jobs so that you can be in poverty and be in total despair. What you want to do is make sure you create an environment where industries and businesses can thrive. Then people can become economically stable. And when they become economically stable, guess what? People don't cry about racism because they have enough money to do what they want. When people say racism, what they mean is, I don't feel financially secure. And if you create an environment where people can determine their own fate, I'm not saying that you decide for them, but the effort that they put in, just like I put in an effort to succeed, the effort they put in will actually come back to them, not picking winners and losers like this administration has done by making sure that nobody can afford anything. And then they decide the two or three that they decide to let out the gate. That's the wrong approach. Let the market decide.
Donna, I want to thank you. I think Holly sums it up better than I can. Great show again, Lembit, and love to Donna. So spirited. Cheers all, she says. And I say the same. Donna Jackson, the pleasure to speak with you. When I come to America, I want to meet you in person sooner rather than later. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
To quote Arnie Schwarzenegger, you'll be back. Thank you so much. That is Donna Jackson. Fantastic to speak with her. Also, Drew Allen earlier on. And thank you to the team, Kimberly and everyone. I've really enjoyed standing in for Mark Morano. He's back tomorrow doing Unleashed. I'll be back on Saturday morning and Sunday as usual. Thanks so much for listening. This is Lembit Opik. This is today's News Talk TNT. Have a wonderful day. I'll see you on Saturday.